podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. The Emmys are over, and was it the best daytime Emmys in recent years? All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Welcome.
Hey.
Jillian Bo, welcome.
Hello.
This is our take two attempt at recording this podcast. Jamie, what were your first impressions of the 2017 Daytime Emmy Awards?
Well, my first impressions were in line with a lot of people that I read online. And, you know, when we tried to do this before, I think it was one of the best Daytime Emmys in a long, long time. I haven't had a lot of the same problems with a lot of the shows, mostly because I would be at them, so I didn't really watch on TV. So, but it definitely has been better than the one on HLN, and my God, definitely better than the Do It for the Vine Girls year. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a step up. It was bittersweet in that this one should have been on TV.
Jillian, what did you think of it?
Took the words right out of my mouth. It was the one year that it was a pretty decent affair that they didn't air it. And I was just so bummed with that. I really thought NBC should have tossed their hat in the ring for that, since they're trying to pimp Megyn Kelly coming to their daytime lineup as the second coming. I would have made it the Megyn Kelly show, the Megyn Kelly Awards, with how much I would have pimped that if I was NBC, just to get eyeballs. But it is what it is. Hopefully next year they will televise the event.
I really enjoyed this year's Emmys. For me, it was, like, emotionally speaking, it was the best one since Susan Lucci won her Emmy. And it wasn't because of the fact that there was this one standout moment like you had when Susan Lucci won. It was the fact that from beginning to end, they seemed to know what they were doing. They acknowledged the daytime soap opera vets. We had wonderful montages. We had wonderful tributes. They opened with daytime singers performing Seasons of Love. And that set the tone for the whole thing. And it was from, whether it was on stage or behind the camera, when Gina Tognoni won, someone behind the camera knew enough about what was going on in daytime to cut to Michelle Stafford's face, which, I mean, I don't think it was throwing shade. It was just that there was someone behind the camera who was cognizant of who you needed to look for to provide a moment for the viewer who was tuning in. And so for me, there were lots of those moments.
That was a little bit of shade, because Michelle...
Yeah, it was.
Well, but
Michelle's,
I mean,
been off that show for years. That was a little bit of shade.
But it's really no different than if the bigger awards would do something like that, because they have someone who's there.
No, they would do that if Michelle and Gina were up for the same award. They would pan to Michelle and be like, girl, you left and this one took your award. Oh, that was hella shade.
I mean, you're right. It was something that the daytime Emmys and the Soap Opera Digest Awards used to do back in the day, but there was a hint of shade. It was a good, It was a good moment, but it definitely, let's not be Pollyannas. It was a bit of shade to show the actress who used to be the character.
I think we had Max Eric, who performed during the In Memoriam, and it ended with I was going to say Stefano on screen, but Joseph Mascolo's Stefano toasting. I thought that was nice. Susan Lucci returning for Agnes Nixon's tribute was wonderful. There were other people who acknowledged her influence in her career. Even something as simple as the daytime Emmys going to the dogs, and they brought all those Basset Hounds on there. It was cute the way they did it and how it was incorporated. And I really appreciate what they did this year to make it what it was. And in some ways, I wonder if the reason why it was as special as it was is because they didn't have to worry about the longer commercial breaks like you would have to normally. This one just felt like, we're going to take the time, we're going to do it right, And because we're going to do it right, we're going to make it meaningful. And for me, that's how it was.
No, well, those, you know, dogs, I'm sorry. I thought that that was just a little, why are they here? And that's nasty. I'm sorry. I'm an animal lover. But you already know, if one has to pee, the one, everybody pees. If one has to take a shit, all of them taking a shit. Like, that was just, ooh, that was
are
just
they like synchronized swimmers?
Yes!
I don't pay that much.
I've never had pets that were synchronized swimmers.
You dogs do that. Yes,
but back to the commercial thing you're talking about, though. It's like, yeah, I mean, you're right. The fact that it's not on commercial television or on cable, were they an ad-supported cable network or an ad-supported broadcast network, that does mean that things like Mary Hart can have a 30-minute speech.
Mary Hart had a wonderful speech.
Anyway, no. It was too long. Bless her heart. Yes. I love you, girl. But, you know, yeah, that is it. You know, you can have those things, except, I mean, you know, you can monetize Facebook Live also. So if they do decide to make this a long-term you know, platform, which I don't really, I'm not as freaked out about that as other people are, because streaming is the way of the world. I mean, if you look at it from a broadcast network perspective, I'm over this whole shaming the networks for not airing it, because networks are, unless it's PBS, broadcast networks are in the business to make money. So you have to make the ratings point. And if they're not making the ratings point for these networks, then they're not going to air it. It's just that simple. These broadcast networks are not charitable trusts. They are in the business of money. And the show, the last few years that it was on broadcast, didn't bring the ratings point that they needed so that they could make the money back from their advertisers. And that's just what it's about. That is what it's all about. That's what the entire genre is about. Whenever people act like it shouldn't be about that, I go back to Erna Phillips, who said herself, radio must sell product. The mama of the soap opera said it best. And that is what it's in the business for, is to make a buck. That is what these suckers were created for, because it was the Great Depression and moms weren't buying detergent. And so they went to Erna and said, can you create a drama that will allow us to hawk our detergent? So yes, that is a factor, and we have to pay attention to that. And once these shows are making a profit and are, you know, monetized correctly, they might come back to broadcast television. I mean, look at, you know, the Tonys came roaring back. I mean, there were years when the Tonys weren't doing that well commercially in terms of an award show, but they had a couple of big hit Broadway shows, and that it all goes together. So, you know, if the daytime shows really start producing some juggernaut ratings, and the thing of it is, the shows that do produce juggernaut ratings in daytime, such as Judge Judy and Ellen, their big stars don't come. So that's a big problem, that, you know, that so many people outside of, you know, the four soaps do their part to show up. And Dr. Oz is always there. And,
yeah. You know,
the Chew people are always there. And shout out to The Talk, which won this year for Outstanding Talk Show Host. They really support, so do The Real. But the bigger rate, you know, the bigger syndicated ratings draws, Judge Judy, Ellen, they send their B team. They send Susie Schniggebagel, who's like, oh, thanks, Ellen can't be here, Steve Harvey can't be here. Judge Judy is like, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's daytime Emmy week. But, you know, they got to start getting those people. They got to figure out how to engage them to come.
I wouldn't be surprised if Megyn Kelly shows up next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do something with her, because
they all, yeah, when they start off, they always start, you know, yeah, she'll
they
be
always,
there for the
they,
first.
They always make the pilgrimage.
Yeah,
the first
they'll
year.
Come for the first 2 to 3 years, and then she'll send her producer, Susie Schniggelbottom.
Well, what they should really do is figure out a way to have Kelly Ripa and
Ryan Seacrest. Yeah, they should host next year.
I wasn't thinking about that. They should have the two Kellys present something together, considering they're going to be time slot competitors.
That's not going to happen, because Kelly Ripa is, like, supposedly, according to the tabloids, shaking in her boots about her. But, yeah, you know, that should be, if I was the booker, I'd say, you know, Kelly, with Megyn Kelly coming to daytime, you're going to want all the buzz you can get. You're going to want all the Facebook Live and Twitter eyeballs you can get.
You know what? On. I'm so messy. I would have had Megyn Kelly and Michael Strahan do a skit or something like, I know about a hostile work environment or something, and just pan to Michael or something like that, just to be messy. Like,
well,
they need to think outside the box a little bit to get people to come tune in.
There's a whole lot of mess going on, considering the fact that NBC announced Megyn Kelly's time slot opposite of Kelly Ripa on the day that Kelly Ripa announces that Ryan Seacrest is going to be coming on her as a host.
Oh, that's just business.
But I thought they had already announced her time slot, Megyn Kelly.
No, it was kind of, well, yeah, they had, it's just been a bunch
they
of
they didn't officially do it, I guess.
Yeah, they gave Tamron Hall's hour the boot, you know, a while back. I mean, yeah, it is what it is. But the thing of it is, the same type of person who wants to watch, those are just going to be two totally different shows. Megyn Kelly, from what I've read, wants to fancy herself the new Oprah, which tried and failed.
Oprah has a heart, sweetness.
And,
so.
You know, but with K-Rip, I mean, her show, especially now with the new co-host, with Ryan Seacrest, that's for people who want something frothy and silly and let's play a game and let's have Kevin Hart on and let's talk silly about Fast and Furious 87, and then let's talk about what my kids did last week. And what did your kids do, Ryan? Oh, you don't have any kids. What did the Kardashians do last week, Ryan? That's the type of morning
I used to love Kelly and Regis. I would watch Kelly and Michael from time to time, but I have no interest whatsoever of Kelly and
But Megyn Kelly's audience is going to be people who, you know, when I read what she wants, I had deja vu of Katie Couric's ginormous $80 million daytime fail.
Well,
because Megyn Kelly is saying she doesn't want to do what she's known for, that she wants to be more like Oprah and go into the heart and home of people's lives. That's not why they are paying her all this money. They're paying her all of this money because she's the woman who almost took down Donald Trump. And I would gather that that's the type of show that NBC wants. Because when you look at her, you don't think warm and fuzzy. Just like with Katie Couric, she was known, it is probably her greatest dismay that she will forever be seen as America's favorite perky morning talk show host. She didn't want to be that, though. She wanted to be substantive, and she wanted to make daytime a substantive time of day. And people just don't really want a lot of substantive talk in daytime.
Well, and look at who at recent years have had failures. I mean, Meredith Vieira tried her own show. It didn't survive. Jane Pauley did her own show. As you said, Katie Couric. I mean, these are ladies who in their own rights have major distinguished careers, and all of them have tried to be the next Oprah. And at some point, what does an executive just say? Give it up.
The big media conglomerates are forgetting the model that brought forth the original Oprah. The original Oprah was an unknown outside of the Chicago market. Yes, she had just booked, you know, she basically, her two biggest hits, you know, kind of coincided. Her acting career and her journalism career took off at the same time as The Color Purple, you know, being cast in The Color Purple and AM Chicago going national. But she was a relative unknown. They found her in the Chicago. I mean, not she wasn't an unknown in the Chicago market because she was already beating Donahue in that Chicago market. But nationally, she was unknown. And they plucked her from obscurity and she came on and she made the show super personal. How much more personal can you get than being a black woman doing a show with the Klan and having, you know, people in there saying the N-word and having to not go out in the audience and punch somebody in the face? And how much more personal can you be than to reveal you were molested on your show and to bring out a big old wagon full of fat when you, I mean, Oprah had a very, I read Katie Kelly's book about it and, you know, I love me some Oprah, but there was a strategy behind how Oprah cried with America and made America love her. Girlfriend, sister, girl, I'm going to tell you that I struggle with being fat too. Girl, I was molested. Girl, I went through these same things that you're going through. But these other women are not trying to cut open veins and bleed out on daytime airwaves.
Well, see, that's what, they only want to provide the inspiration. They don't want to. They don't want to. They want, only want to provide the inspiration. They don't want to provide.
Yeah, they
want
to be brand ambassadors.
They
yeah,
be as yeah. Big Oprah was a. Oprah. Yeah.
They don't want to lay their. They don't want to lay themselves bare.
They want to dominate like
bare.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. They want to dominate and crucify the ratings like Oprah, but they don't want to keep it real like
whatever Oprah. Oprah was going through in her life, she put it on that show. Whenever someone was like, "Why won't Stedman marry Oprah?" she made that a topic. What, you know, whatever people, whatever, you know, people
she
were
also
like,
sort of indirectly addressed the Gail and Oprah rumors at various
yeah,
points.
Y'all think we're gay? We're gonna go on road trips together. I am going to you know, take you right into the heart of my life. And you know, and she did that well, and they haven't found anyone who, you know, and, you know, they keep spending, you know, they keep, as we say in the South, putting, you know, good money after bad. And I don't think Megyn Kelly is engaging enough to bring in droves of daytime audiences. But back to the daytime Emmy.
Well, I was going to say, right. Someone.
She should use, she should be using it. But the thing of it is, you're looking for earned media exposure. And if I'm a Megyn Kelly, or if I'm Megyn Kelly's marketing person, and I know that for the last couple of years the Emmys have just been streamed, you know, with hiccups, and you know, as great as the show was, you know, my Facebook Live connection got a couple of hiccups, you know. So yeah, there, you know, if it was still on, say, even a Pop or something like that, I could see the Megyn Kellys of the world saying, "Well, let's go use this as a promotional platform." But I don't know how. I mean, even like with Susan Lucci coming back, that would have been huge if it had been promoted a little better. And, you know, because, I mean, that there were a lot of stars in that. You know, Bryn Thayer, Kim Delaney, you know, Blair Underwood was at the Emmys this year. I mean, and yeah, we got the press releases about it, but I don't know if there was enough buzz generation around any of that. I mean, but it was the best show in years. I know for a fact that, you know, Pop has been willing to air it since they aired it the last time. But, you know, Natas would, you know, wanted more money than Pop was willing to pay. And it's like, if you're not getting anybody to air it, you might want to just go ahead and negotiate with
right?
the one cable channel that is willing to air it. So, I mean, you can't negotiate, you know, when you
can't
don't
cut
have
your nose.
You know?
Yeah, you can't cut your nose off despite your face with
so
that.
So they might want to go back to the table with Pop so that it can at least get on cable.
And then have whoever produced it this year do it.
David Michaels, he's been producing it.
Something was different this year. I don't know what, but something was different. I don't know if they have a new person on the team, but something was different than in recent years. One thing that was very interesting about this year's show was that we had Cheryl Underwood and Mario Lopez, both daytime, well, one's current daytime, one's in a daytime olim, hosting.
He's still in daytime. Extra is a daytime show. Syndicated news magazines are daytime programs.
Oh yes, as Mary Hart reminded us.
That's why I'm here.
As well as some markets it airs, you know, at nighttime. So
but
I
it's
get
still
what
daytime.
Yeah,
it's still
yeah.
considered. They go up for daytime Emmys. It's still a daytime strip.
So what did you guys think of their hosting together? There were some people who complained about Cheryl Underwood maybe taking things too far. I might have been one of those people, but I know I'm not alone in it. What did you guys think of them hosting? I love her passion for it.
No, you're not alone. You're in great company with Nancy Lee Grodd.
Who wrote a post on Facebook, which you can find that on her Facebook page if you would like. But
don't they advertise that? Pretty sure.
Oh no, go look.
No, I would. I mean, the reason why I say it is we're not making this up. This is something that she wrote and was shared with her fans. So I'm just saying, if you want to read the verbiage, go ahead and read it.
What verbiage it was.
Yes, exactly. But together, I enjoyed them as a co-host. I love that Cheryl has this passion for daytime. I personally thought that the what started out okay with her sort of hitting on Mario because he is hot, and the whole Twitter follower thing was good to a point, but it, at some point it crossed the line for me where it just got a little bit rapey, and it was like, okay, you could back up a few steps from it.
And so,
a disservice to real rape victims how much that term is just thrown around.
Well, she kept saying what she was going to do to him without his consent.
She said what she...
She reached down and grabbed his uncircumcised penis. Did I miss that part? That would have been rape. She was doing double entendre, and sometimes... she was doing the same thing that Charo and Kim Cattrall and Sex Bombs have done since the beginning of television. She was being the hot and heavy, hubba hubba type girl to his nervous straight man. And it's something we've seen a thousand times, all this
and
pearl
clutching. Like I said, I didn't have a problem with it at first. I just thought that it went on too long and too often to the point where it became uncomfortable to watch after a certain point.
But
for me, that's what
I felt that way about Mary Hart, but I didn't call her rapey.
It was not rapey, though.
Yeah.
It's the oldest shtick in the book, and it's so tame compared to what Ricky Gervais does when he hosts other award shows. The fact that, we get these lectures on propriety and what it means to be a daytime star and get respect. They do this stuff at the Golden Globes. They do, if this was Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, it wouldn't have been, I've said it, offline to Luke and Mike. If this was Kim Cattrall doing it, would it have even been a conversation? Or is it because it is, Cheryl Underwood, who doesn't fit America's aesthetic for what a sex bomb or a oversexed woman should be? I wonder, would we even be talking about it if
I don't know.
It was Rihanna.
I don't.
There?
To me, it was just because it went on too long. The way it started, it wasn't problematic.
And let the record show, Mario built a career by calling a woman hot mama on Saved by the Bell. Of course, that was scripted.
That was also a very long time ago.
No, you can't do that. No, that's not cool.
What I'm saying is the culture wasn't as cognizant of certain things back when he was doing that as they are now.
So the culture is going to take away everything.
That's not true, because people, they would make sure write in Jesse saying you're a sexist pig. Like, no.
It was the revenge of Jessica Spano. That's what Cheryl Underwood was bringing about.
I don't think it was a bit.
They rehearsed the heck out of it. As someone who's been a daytime Emmy performer, they rehearsed that 1,000 times. He acted like he was uncomfortable because he's an actor. But they rehearsed the heck out of that bit. So he had to be okay with it.
I don't think the race thing has anything to do with it. Well, let me back up. I don't think race had anything to do with that outrage, because I know what them
got. Not so much race, but her look. The fact that she's not glad.
I don't think
some people might not consider. Like, if she was Kim Cattrall doing her Samantha Jones shtick up there next to him, I wonder would it have even caused
a moment. I don't know. I think... go ahead, Jillian.
Yeah. I don't think that, for me... I don't think that any of that played a part in that, because I know for me, for those Vine girls, they're in their 20s. When that girl said to an actor,
I
want to rape you.
Typically, I want to rape you. She literally said.
Yeah, right.
I guess.
She said, I'm going to have sex with you if I get X amount of Twitter followers.
I guess I would compare it to like a Melissa McCarthy, if you're going to do someone who's comparable and white, and if race is not a factor. Melissa is very good with her comedy, and I don't think that Melissa would have like just let it go
Did you not watch Bridesmaids? Huh? Her whole scene on the plane in Bridesmaids was her basically telling the
But it's
the
not
undercover...
the whole movie.
No, Luke, your point is negated by bringing up Melissa McCarthy, because she's most famous at this point by sitting there telling a very awkward undercover airplane cop person. I don't even know what you really call those. I'm going to fuck you. And he's like, no, you're not. And then in the end, she got to screw him. So maybe what we missed is Mario Lopez banging the booty out of Cheryl Underwood all night long. I mean, no, Melissa McCarthy, that is her shtick too.
What I am saying is Melissa McCarthy would do the same type of routine. I just don't like the movies that I've watched of hers. When I watched her on television, various things, she always seems to know that you don't go
like you watch daytime because you missed her biggest scene in Bridesmaids, which I just informed you of.
All I'm saying is that I like I said before, I didn't have a problem with most of it. I just think it went on too long. Jillian, we had a lot of actors who won. Brian Craig won for younger actor. Lexi Ainsworth won for younger actress. Steve Burton and Kate Manzi won for supporting actor and supporting actress. Gina Tognoni won for lead actress. And Scott Clifton won for outstanding actor. What's your reaction to the acting awards winners?
I was kind of shocked about Steve Burton. I'm like, I didn't expect that. Now he could be like, bitches, I won. Y'all made a mistake. Y'all better don't bring him back. Brian Craig, he's a good actor, but my God, that's going to go to that kid's head, let me tell you. He just has the ego the size of Wyoming, that one. I was happy that Lexi Ainsworth finally won. Because the Davis girls are always overlooked. They are some powerhouses. They get it from Big Mama. So I was cool with her winning as well. And Scott Clifton, I mean, we joke about wash, rinse, and repeat over at B&B, but he literally can take something really not good on paper and not good viewing wise and make you believe. You can feel Liam's conundrum and so forth. So I was pretty cool with him winning with that. So it was fine.
Jamie, what do you think?
I'll start with Scott since Jillian finished up with him. I think I'm very, very happy. You know, he is a lead actor. He gave credit to Bold's publicist, Eva Basler, for convincing him to, you know, kind of do away with the whole Alicia Minshew strategy of putting yourself in supporting when you're really the lead, kind of to, you know, stay in your lane, which is only daytime does that. So I was really glad that both he and Billy Flynn put themselves in the categories that they fit in. And he, in my opinion, deserved it. I mean, as ludicrous as the whole Adam and Eve story was, you know, he really brought you into the feeling and the emotion of what it must be like to be kidnapped and romanced by a woman claiming to be your wife in a cabin, only to find out that she's your brother's mother who once tried to kill you with a sword. I hope I never have to really be able to empathize with that. But if I do, I will think, this must be what it was like for Liam, and that is thanks to Scott Clifton. For lead actress, Gina Tognoni, come on. Gina Tognoni is a boss. She's a boss. She nailed it in I didn't really like the production values of that, you know, the episode in the Abbott house with the, you know, the Jack finding out about Billy. But the actors killed it. She killed it on the stand at Victor's trial. Gina's a boss lady. These categories are really tough. Supporting actor, I think Steve Burton did a solid job. I'm not surprised that he won it all. As to what Jillian is saying, and I know people are going to think I'm crazy about this, but
yeah,
Y&R has had, like, you know, all the shows have really suffered in the ratings. Now, y'all know I don't want Dylan on the show for a long period of time.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
but
no.
I would bring him back for 3 months.
I'll
tell you why. Because
go get one of them dogs from that show to fight you.
So many of they need some. They need to ramp up a couple of stories, and so if I was at Y&R, I would have Stitch, who basically has gone missing in action, basically be like, what the F, Sharon? Where is Dylan? Why didn't no one tell me? I mean, were there that many bedpans at the hospital that no one told me that my boy just up and disappeared? I haven't heard from him in months. This isn't like him. And when the Newmans just close ranks and say, shut up, Stitch, go get another buzz cut, he brings in Avery. And Avery is like, what is going on? And then they go on GC Buzz and ask him, you know, do a thing where they ask the world, because everybody's looking at GC Buzz now. It's a national show. Is Dylan McAvoy? And then that triggers, the cartel realizing who this guy was. And then some no good nicks from Miami show up at the ranch, knock Victor the F out, kidnap Sharon. And then, you know, everybody has to figure out, how do we do this? Then Dylan comes out of hiding. They rescue Sharon. He gets killed in a blaze of glory, saving Sharon's life.
Ooh, I like that.
As long as Dylan ends up dead, I'm okay with it.
Exactly. Bring him back. All the players in his story, Avery, Stitch, do an end to this. And then we find out that, and let Victor help save the day a little bit so that him and Nikki can go back to Oochie-Coochie-Coo-Coo-Coo. There you go.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the younger actors?
Oh, very happy for little Lexi up there in Brenda Barrett's clothes. Look at her playing dress up.
She looked beautiful in it.
She did. I was happy for little Lexi.
She just robbed her step auntie's closet.
Mama, she walked down the aisle with Sonny. He put a ring on it.
I was thinking about Molly. Yeah. My bad.
Stepmama,
not step auntie. I was thinking Molly.
Yeah, there ain't no such thing as a step auntie.
Step auntie, that would have been her aunt.
Brian Craig is one of the best actors in daytime, and only on Twitter does arrogance really matter. I mean, half these actors in movies and film are arrogant. Christian Bale is arrogant, and he still gets work. Brian Craig, it went to his head, but hey, it does that with the best of them. It's a whole lot of big heads on that show that I ain't gonna name no names, but it shouldn't be the Are You Likeable Award, but it is in a lot of ways. But he's a great actor, and in my opinion, he is one of the best to ever come through that younger actor category. So I have no problem with that. I'm glad little Olivia didn't win, because I like her, and I think she's going to be a huge star. Dolly Parton, is doing all these movies with her, but I really want her sore ass on The Young and the Restless. It's not, and people, whenever you say that on Twitter, people are like, oh gosh, why would you say that? It's like, because I grew up watching daytime. And on daytime, especially The Young and the Restless, except for Cassie, we didn't really keep these precocious little kids running around all the time.
Yeah, that's General Hospital shtick.
Faith needs to go. She is dead of wrong about business.
Well, I was thinking about, like, Kimberly McCullough and Brooklyn Ray.
Though, because the thing of it is with YNR, they sore ass these kids and then do nothing with them. Abby's running around with the reality star real estate agent. Noah's, making Mai Tais. They don't really sore ass with a lot of thought with what they're going to do with them once they're grown at The Young and the Restless, and that's been several regimes. General Hospital, I would sore ass a lot of those children. Yes, little Brooklyn too. Yes, Spencer. Yes, they're adorable, but they need a teen set on that show, and it's getting to be summer. Summer will be here shortly, and there's no plan to even attempt. It's like they've just given up trying to bring in younger viewers. YNR is setting up something with Reed and his little Betty and Veronica, with the blonde. But think of it is, like, as much as I see what they're trying to do, and I like that, I appreciate it, I knew the names Mackenzie Browning and Brittany Hodges shortly after they began playing them.
Yes, because they were memorable.
He has been kissing on these girls for 2 months, and I'm like, who y'all? Who is y'all? What's your name, LeBron?
You know what?
To put it in another way, they really need their Lucas Horton for that triangle.
They need to bring...
They need to... Oh, go ahead.
Good. I was going to say they need to bring Brittany Hodges' boy back. Little Bobby.
Yeah, that's perfect. They need a Lucas Horton on there, because if you have Reed as the good boy, and then you have two girls, and then you have a bad boy as a rival.
Was Lucas Horton a bad boy?
Well, he was always scheming with Sammy.
This was a little nerd booger.
But he was. But I was talking about the scheming. Him and Sammy schemed a lot.
The bad, you don't have to go to dates
for archetypes for that. Reed is their Billy Abbott at that age. They need a JT. Even though Reed is JT, JT was the bad boy at Walnut Grove.
I always thought JT was one of the lamest characters. Bobby.
No, JT was a great bad boy early on. He and Brittany Hodges, until JT fell in love
with Mac.
Sweetie butt. No, not Mac. He fell in love with little sweetie butt. Colleen, do you watch the
that's right.
Show?
It's been so when it came to that storyline, all I cared about was Brittany. So
I know. That's why people always be nice to Luke. Jamie, you talk too much. Jamie, watch the TV show though. Haters in the comments.
I watch it too, but I just cared about Brittany Hodges. But Jillian, you're right.
Mac till she was grown and dressing in army combat clothes and shit. No, when JT first fell in love with little Colleen, they humanized him and made him a hero. But early on, he was the jerk. Brittany and him were the jerks, and Billy and Mac were the star-crossed lovers. I don't know why Rihanna was there, to be honest. I still don't know why she was there. Rao was the...
Okay. Rihanna.
Rihanna.
What was her name?
Rihanna. Not Rihanna.
What wasn't on that? Didn't they have a Rihanna on there?
No.
No.
Little girl. She went on to Days and played one of those space twins. Cassie on Days of Our Lives.
Oh.
I guess her name was Rihanna. Rihanna. Somebody like that. Look here. Y'all keep on challenging me. What was her name? Alexis Thorpe played... Who she play on Young and the Restless? Rihanna Manor, let the record show. Bow down, bitches, bow down, bitches. Rihanna Manor, that was her name. Yes, she was. She was one of the Walnut Grove children. Yes, she
Why am I picturing, like, no. When you kept saying that, I was picturing the black Rihanna. I'm like,
yeah, I'm like.
I was like, in a black girl song there.
Rihanna changed her name so she could be like, maybe her manager watched Young and the Restless. Because her name.
Shut up.
Rihanna Minor. She was with Ryle at first until everybody decided they wanted Mac. All the boys decided Mac's milkshake brought all the boys to the yard.
And that just had to be sour milk, too.
Well, now, wait a minute. Ryle also got with Brittany for a while until about that grown man took her away.
Jillian, you are right. They need to bring back Brittany Hodges' kid. That would be perfect.
They didn't write the Walnut Grove kids like ancillary, you know, appendages like we've seen with the Young and the Restless youth and the youth on all these shows. It's not just Walnut. Days does try to write for their teenagers. I'll give them that. Dina, I'll give you that you tried it. But that's about all I can say, because we do get teen stories.
And the history there between Reed and Bobby Marcino's kid would be rich. Their parents went to high school. Well, their mom and dad went to high school together. And then you have the other flip side, that Bobby's daddy had a crush on Reed's big mama. Like, the history there would be juicy.
It would be really good. You're right.
But now, why would their kid be going to... Well, that's why he don't go to prep school. Never mind, because I was going to say, Walnut Grove. How could their kid go to Walnut Grove? But they go into regular high school now.
Just imagine this for a second. Marcino's kid comes back, and he's like a young Carmine type, a young Marco Dapper type. That would be a great teen, quad.
Yeah, and he could fall in love with the little blonde girl that Reed likes, and he could scheme with the little brunette
girl.
Just like with Matt Clark, too, except we won't have him raping anybody. You know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, there you Matt Clark, Sharon, Nick, Amy, there were real stories told there. And again, this is not just an indictment on Y&R, but it, you know, with that category of younger, really, Brian Craig was damn near a lead on GH. So, of course, he should have won because they don't do anything with any of the other younger people. Yeah, they gave Christina that 5 minute. Oh, I like both. I like vag and I like penis. I don't know what to do, you know. But that story was, I'm going to be honest, the fact that Daytime wins so many accolades for LGBT stories, and we know as people who watch all year long how they flat out refuse to fully integrate gay characters on these canvases, I think that Daytime should be ashamed to go accept these awards sometimes because, you know, they flat out won't, you know, Frank gave the most, you know, cop-out answer when he did his last Who Wants to Tweet Me, Babies, Tweet Me, and they asked him about Christina and Parker, and he said something about, they ended it, and you know, because it's not age appropriate. Are you kidding me? And now what? You have Sunny. Yes, he said that. He's like, you know, her next romance will be somewhat age appropriate. But now you have Sunny trying to soil some 30-year-old lawyer woman, and he's in his 50s.
Hold up. Wait a minute. Urge back up. So Valenzati said it wasn't age appropriate. I could see it.
He didn't. I'm paraphrasing. He said that. Her next, you know, basically, yeah, that Christina Parker, Bridget was just to let her you know, explore her womanly flower. Again, I'm paraphrasing. But now she'll have someone more age appropriate. Yeah, that's what he said.
Okay, Jillian. Hold up, but my thing is this though. If I could see if Parker was praying after a student in high school, then I'd be like, I get what Frank's saying with shit, but Christina's a grown woman in college trying to pressure that married woman. You won't get this to us. Are you serious? Like, how out of touch is that?
Daytime is so, and across the board, they're so scared to push the envelope. That's you would not believe some of the stuff that I hear. I mean, meanwhile, Archie debuts on the CW with seemingly 15 or 16-year-old Archie banging Mrs. Grundy. I mean, and, you know, twins rowing across a river who kind of have a twincest vibe, and one of them comes up, you know, belly up, you know, bloated and dead, shot through the head. Daytime has become so tepid and scared
and out of touch.
And you know, but heaven forbid they get these thoughts about not doing any more doppelgangers or evil twins, but anything contemporary and realistic and real gets a, oh, we shouldn't do that. That's not escapist enough, or that's not, you know, we might lose viewers. What do you have to lose? You know,
You go over to Soap Opera
Network and read Toop's column, and it just makes you depressed. It's just like a row of ties new low. How low can you? How low can you go? And it's, you know, you don't want to do anything LGBT. The black characters are all still islanded, you know, except for, yeah, they'll throw Mariah in with the black folks on Y&R, but the black folks are still pretty much islanded on GH. They're just the cops who sort of hang with the white folks when there's some crime going on.
Well, and they could have pursued something with Greg Reckhart's Kevin, but now that's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, he was begging them to make him gay. We were begging them to make him gay. Jill Farron Phelps is like, we're not going to just do a gay story to tell one. Oh, but y'all would doppelgang Peter Bergman and make him Latino, though. Y'all would do that just to be doing it.
Speaking of which, Jillian, how tightly did you clutch your pearls when Chuck Pratt won for writing?
Chow, I mean, I'm just going to be honest. I wanted him to go up there to be like, chow, da-da, watch out now, bitches, this is mine now. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. For half the year, I've said it on this podcast, I enjoyed Chuck Pratt. The takedown of Victor Newman, that storyline was one of the best for half the year. He just happened to shit it up when Victor went to jail and he had Victor, you know, getting titties flashed in his face and hunching the female doctor. Yes, she did. She sure did. She showed her. Victoria told her secret, baby. She said, "I got no secret." She said, "My secret is you should not be hunching people in this jail, you nasty tramp." Like, he messed up when he had that going on. That was messed up. And Ray Weiss and Victor having a bet, you know, a Boniva versus and show a face off.
I want her to cut back on Victor's.
No, don't you do that. Don't you do that right now. And I will demand that after.
Toddler with a mustache. I have someone for you to
meet. I will demand asses get got on that show. No, but seriously, I enjoyed half the year when Chuck was there, and then the other half, I don't know what happened. I don't know who took over writing or who took over note-wise or whatever. It was just, ugh. But half the year, it was a solid show. So I was fine with that.
Jamie, what do you think of him, his win?
I have come to make my peace with the Chuck Pratt of it all. And I mean, it's a situation where, you know, this guy would not have the resume he did if he didn't know something about the art of soap opera. And, you know, I have to admit that my, you know, disgust for him really didn't start in earnest until All My Children, because Chuck Pratt was an integral part of creating some of my favorite moments in television history.
And I remember how excited you were for him to come to All My Children and turn Liza into a turbo.
I did not know he was going to turn Liza into
But I know, but you were really excited about what he could do with the character based on your love for his previous story.
It wasn't about Liza. It was All My Children, because I thought, ooh, we're going to get Melrose Place. Anyone who watched Melrose Place, yes, Melrose Place. I look at Melrose Place a lot of the same way that I do Days in the 90s. Everyone remembers the Devil Possession and Buried Alive, but there was also the introduction of Billy Lucas, Kate, Austin, the reveal that they were family, and the reveal that Lucas was Bill Horton's child. There was also the great epic love of John and Marlena that really kicked up in earnest under Riley. There was also the fact that Sammy Brady became daytime's most unstoppable super bitch under James Riley. With Chuck Pratt and Melrose Place, people always remember blowing up the building and a lot of the other crazy stuff, but if you really watched, you know, every single week like I did without fail, and you remember things like how Amanda treated D&D like her fiefdom, and how she punished Allison for every turn, and how she screwed everyone's man and was just the ultimate bitch goddess on that show, I thought, okay, maybe, you know, Fusion will be like D&D on Melrose Place, and we'll get some of these, you know, badass corporate stories and scheming and conniving and love triangles, and we didn't get that. We got, you know, actor characters become, you know, Liza was always a prude sexually, except for, you know, her affair with Tad, and she's screwing random men on tables, and they're doing CGI tornadoes, and, you know, it wasn't what I expected. And then, you know, most egregiously, what he did with the lesbian wedding, with, you know, women kissing men, because that's what lesbian viewers want to see. And then, you know, what he wanted to do was even worse, because he wanted Bianca screwing men. So, yeah, I was appalled by what he did at All My Children, and was appalled by what he did at The Young and the Restless. Although, to be fair, to be completely honest, a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was in talks about going to White House. So, yeah, a lot of that might have been shade at my fault. I'm not a lot of it. I know it was, because I'm like, what? You're telling me I got to, you know, kiss all these pinky rings just to get the meetings, and you're hiring the biggest hack in daytime? And so, yeah, I was salty. But he proved my salt right when he came in and was blowing up planes full of Negroes and having serial killers chasing the chillins all over town, and we didn't have any plot or any structure. I still don't know why that serial killer was after those chillins. But then he did calm down by the time they brought Justin Hartley back, and the show got really good. But it should be noted that YNR was using a sort of revolving door of former head writer long stories, and Josh Griffith wrote a lot of the Adam trajectory with Justin Hartley. You know, he wrote long story documents that the show bought that Chuck pretty much executed. So, you know, that's the thing. It's like, it's, you know, did Chuck Pratt really win? Or, you know, I mean, I ain't trying to be funny, but, you know, when, you know, a true head writer is the head writer. They're not just executing stuff that was set up by other people. And I don't know if that was still the case, but, you know, I know it was the case back in, you know, back when Chuck first got there. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I do feel like Jillian, though, no matter what, no matter how they managed to, you know, cobble it all together, YNR did, it was interesting a lot during that last season. And then it, you know, they kind of backpedaled and had everyone, you know, we're sorry, Dad, we're sorry. But you see, I see a lot of that. Like right now, I mean, when Sally came on, it was, we're not going to do Philly anymore, and we're going to make Victor a human being again. And I've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks a complete shift. So they tend to do that a lot at this current, you know, amalgamation.
Yeah, some of it. Like, yeah.
You know, a vision is started, and then it's like, no, Philly is back. Victor is back at no good, Nick. Jack is back mad at Victor. It's like, let's just go back to everything as it was, because we need to do everything.
Jack
like
mad
us.
At Victor.
Jack is gunning to go back at Victor. He hasn't mentioned Victor in months, and now all of a sudden, every other scene is, Nikki, what's going on with you and Victor? Abby, what's going on with your daddy? I'm going to get did you miss the scene where he told Phyllis he wants to get revenge after months of telling Phyllis, let it go, darling, I know he doppelgang raped you, but no, we must move on. And then all of a sudden he's at her house, we got to take Victor down. I mean, that is a complete 180.
Well, speaking of a complete 180, Jamie, what was it like to be on Twitter and finally express your frustration for the Jelly storyline of Jason strangling his son, and then a day or two later seeing them win for their writing it, or not win, the show win?
I don't have those moments like y'all do, I guess, where, or you do. I don't have those moments where I'm shocked because someone wins after I've criticized them. I was in that Daytime Emmy press room when that little girl that played Melissa won All My Children. So, I know that with Daytime especially, winning an award is not a, you know, litmus test of quality. So and Jelly didn't win an Emmy. Chuck Pratt won an Emmy. That's the other thing.
I restated it. I said writing, Frank, and then I changed it to drama.
Frank won as the moderator for best show. The writers at GH did not win, so I don't feel any type of way about that. Plus, I've been mostly trying to find the silver lining in Jelly's writing. But with GH winning best show.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Mm.
Well, and I'll tell you why. Because for me,
I said I don't know how you do that.
No, yeah. For me, GH still feels the most modern of the shows left on the air. I don't know if that means anything to voters or what, but I do feel it's more in line. It's more in lockstep with ABC's primetime shows. It's, you know, it has the, you know, the teasered six act structure. I don't even know what YNR or Day's structures are, but I know that they feel super slow to me. GH moves at a quick pace. And yes, GH can be absurd, but so can Scandal. I mean, if we're going to be real, I feel GH is more in line with its primetime shows than YNR is to The Good Fight, or that Days is, even though I've enjoyed YNR's sort of resurgence, there's certain things that YNR is going to have to boost up, but this is about last year anyway. But, you know, I feel that, you know, GH to me is the best of what we're getting any given day of the week in terms of I can watch it and not just be scratching. You know, I feel like if Frank, I'm just going to be, here's an example. If Frank wanted to do a talk show on GH, I feel it would feel much more like a talk show than that awfulness that is still GC Buzz. But Wyatt Earp is like
show. Stop doubling it.
Down on that. That backdrop looks like something we created in my freshman year broadcasting course, and it's supposed to be, you know, some contender with, you know, that Julie Chen is going to come on soon. I mean, that just looks amateurish and bad. And YNR is doing a lot of that type of stuff. It might be budget or whatever, but, you know, and these women feuding over, you know, Devon, and I don't feel there's any chemistry over, but, you know, that's a whole other topic. I just feel GH is a stronger, more cohesive hour of television. Even with all of my gripes, I wish that Gene and Shelley would never attempt another mystery story again. I wish that they would never try to borrow from history again. But in terms of the show that they put on, the staging of the show, the show being the, you know, the overall thing as opposed to the parts, I do feel GH puts on a better show for me. YNR feels hodgepodge. GH doesn't do wonky technical things. You won't see, if Sonny writes Carly a letter, you're not going to see a hologram of Carly's you know, hovering. I keep waiting for this brilliant Mal Young thing to happen. I mean, this is, I don't want to be shady or too hateful, but it's like, you wouldn't see, if Sonny writes Carly a four-page letter, when Carly's reading, yeah, you might hear the voiceover, but you're not going to see Sonny's head hovering over the letter like Chloe's was. That's stupid to me. And if I'm a voter and looking at that type of shit, I'm like, why are y'all doing this? That's dumb. Why is Chloe's head floating over letters? Why? That's not anything innovative or anything new or anything that you're seeing in prime time or film. That's just slocky and stupid. And I see YNR doing too much of that. Bold is pretty much very traditional. Its staging is, it hasn't really changed a lot in 30 years, other than they do, you know, more montages and beach scenes and flashbacks. And, you know, for the, you know, I love the Avots, but I'm sitting here laughing that, you know, it's like, why we see this clip of the Avots when y'all don't even play them anymore?
Oh, my God. Did you hear with that bad wig? Woo!
Jillian, what did you think of General Hospital winning Best Drama?
I mean, you know, Jamie gave some valid points, but that's some alternative facts for me, child, because I'm like, good Lord, it's still hard for me to watch. It was hard even before this new regime got there. Like, I'd be like, oh, God, I have to watch this thing for this show now. I'm sorry. I was a little shocked. Not shocked. I was shocked that they won. And, you know, and Thirsty Mercy over there jumping up on there. Hey, bitches, I'm going to do me a XGH again. And what, y'all? Like, oh, God. Ugh. I was not amused at that show one. Sorry.
Jamie, even though you weren't on the red carpet, you still had the opportunity to break some news. You blogged about Roger Howarth's contract negotiations, and it looks like Adam Newman's going to be recast again.
Yes, Roger's contract negotiations. I mean, it seems like every major GH actor's contract negotiations become tense at this point in the game. Again, I mean, hopefully this will be deja vu with Becky Herbst as opposed to deja vu with Tyler Christopher, and he gets renewed. Although it's weird, I see a lot of, you know, the comments are mixed on social media and on our site. A lot of people are like, I hope he goes, and then some people are like, I hope he stays. I hope he stays because I feel that he's strong opposite. I think that he's strong opposite Rebecca, but okay, say that. Do the Liz fan, and then when she's
it's not about Liz. It's about Franco.
But when she's helping evil Brad on the evil gay scheme in the lab, having nothing else to do, I mean,
he was bad from the moment they decided to bring him back. And if this is finally what gets that character out of there, I'm not going to complain.
So are we going to talk about that until Jesus comes back?
No, but I'm just saying, I will not be, like, Roger Howarth is a talented actor, but if he ends up deciding to pursue other things, more power to him.
And then they're going to put Liz with Dr. Priest a lot, and they will not be inspired to write for them, and so Becky suffers too. good well, job.
Billy's suffering too, so I don't know. I mean,
Billy who?
Billy Miller.
He's not suffering. Jason and Sam are solid.
No, Why? I'm talking about. I'm just talking about the stories that Jason is getting. They're not really great stories.
No, they're not good stories.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, on a show where you were talking about Becky, I'm not particularly a fan. Well, I'm not a fan of her, and I'm not a fan of Fritz. So I don't see how her not being in a Fritz relationship is going to be any different than
Fritz.
Jason.
He said Fritz. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I'm talking Scandal.
That's because you're talking like a fanboy right now. Because you obviously have been taught by me enough to know the difference. Yes, the difference is Roger Howarth is a rock star. So because she's with Roger Howarth, we see her more than when she was, you know, the third wheel in the Jason and Sam story and the forgotten, and they tried to fire her twice or tried to get rid of her twice because the, you know, two network powers that be have felt that Jason and Sam were more the money shot than Jason and Liz. So as a fan of Liz, what you're saying is because you don't like Franco, you'd rather him be gone and her, they're not going to be inspired to write some great new story for her. And this is what the thought could very well be. Well, we finally found a coupling that, you know, she did create a fan following, not just you, you know, you don't personally like it, but there are a droves of Frizz fans. And according to the Doug Marlin model, it's supposed to be listen to your fans. Yes, there are characters who don't like him because he's Franco. And that is, it is, to me, that's an it is what it is thing. Unless, I mean, this is GH. All they would have to do, in my opinion, look, do I have to fix everything? All they would have to do is, for Frank Valentini to put a lot of, you know, product in his hair and saunter up to James Franco at some event. Hi, James Franco. I'm Frank Valentini, and I know you came on for Jill Ferd Phelps. And if you'd come on for that old bat, you'll definitely come on for me, won't you? Smile, glint, hair to the ready. And then James Franco, who is still doing soap opera-related stuff with that Caleb Lindsay, will be like, can Caleb come on as Epiphany's cousin? Sure. So you bring James Franco back. He comes over that Helena Hospital, big screen TV thing, and it's just like, hello everyone, it's me, Franco. I'm Franco, not the other one. He's not Franco. Ha ha ha. He was one of my Franco Friniacs. I'm paraphrasing the dialogue because I would make it better. He was really one of my Franco Friniacs, an obsessed fan of mine. And Heather Weber and I cut to the split screen. Heather's there too. Ha ha ha. We played a trick on all of Port Charles.
You
He's
just won
really-
over Mike.
He's not really.
Ooh, so, I mean,
this is the type of show that you can do that. You can reveal that the guy we think is Franco is really just. Remember how they set up that he had all those obsessed fans? You could reveal that this guy was a Franco Friniac that Franco dispatched on Port Charles. Bring back James Franco to reveal, yes, I am the motherfucker who had Michael raped in prison. It was me. Ah, I have been
so
playing. This has all been one of my big performance art pieces.
Okay,
and
I have a question.
Did
you say Roger Howarth is a brainwashed, let me think, Eckhart. What's the Eckhart boy?
Sly Eckhart.
He's really Sly Eckhart, who, you know, because of that brain tumor, got all...
Oh, get out of here.
What about
people froze the world. They can figure out how to un-Franco Franco.
Okay,
what about Howarth being Adam Newman?
No.
He's too old for Adam Newman. I mean,
he's not that much different than Michael Muni.
He's 50.
Adam
Amelia Hyman, no.
Brother of Victoria and Nicholas by 20 years. Take away sore acid. Victoria was on husband number two by the time Blind Hope came to town and had that baby, wasn't she? Or at least husband number one.
Yeah, something like that. Like, no.
No, I mean, you know, you can't make the baby boy Newman suddenly the oldest boy Newman. I mean, it would be fire in terms of, yeah, Roger Howarth opposite Eric Braeden, but they ain't looking at anybody from daytime for that part. So, you know, they have this no daytime mantra over there.
That is supposed. So dumb.
I don't understand that, but, you know, that to me is
that's
absurd.
Dumb.
Because, you know.
No, but I have a problem with the storyline that you're pitching. You know, when you talk about Frank and all that, if he is putting hair product in and doing his thing, why he ain't put hair product in Luke Spencer's hair? Bitch, that looking like
because that was a White Walker. You can't do anything once they're frozen.
Okay, I'm still you hush. I'm still mad at that. That's where you wanted to talk about when you know in the outline. That is what I was pissed about because like
totally.
Was this the topic that you were so upset about?
Yes.
All I got was on Twitter was like, I can't wait for the podcast because I'm going to go off. And I'm like, I don't know what Jillian's.
They finally found Holden Caulfield from The Catcher in the Rye. I don't know what happened to his hat that he was so proud of for those of y'all who had it in high school. He was dressed like he was straight out of The Catcher in the Rye. But that hair, Miranda Priestly. Andrea.
I am busy at the office. I never go into the office at all. This is the one time I get called into the office, and I'm like, oh, shit, what y'all calling me in this motherfucker? You know? So I am like, you know, I see my phone blowing up. Like, I see Jamie Lord when Jillian sees this. So, like, I just bum rush some intern. I'm like, borrow this laptop from you, gal. She's like, I am done dead. God. I'm like, too bad. Shit, I go over there, and I'm like, what are you talking about? I email Jamie, I'm like, what you talking about? So he's like, Luke's hair. So at first I'm like, Luke Carr, what you did to your hair? And then I'm like, oh, Luke Spencer. And I'm like, oh my God, does he have his perm back? So I like go on Twitter, I send out the bat signal. I'm like, I need to see what this looks like. Forget that I'm supposed to be talking to my editor or whatever. When somebody screen capped that and was like, people flooded my timeline. It was like a swarm. They were like, here you go. I was like, oh my God. Like, Frank is such the diva. He likes everybody to look like Frank Fox, but you let this thing flip.
Frank wasn't running that. I'm going to tell you what God loved. Frank wasn't running none of this. Jane Elliott and Tony ran this. Jane Elliott and Tony Geary pitched this, and they got it on the air. There was some jockeying and back and forth and some, we ain't going to do it your way, and we not going to do it my way. And I thought, you know, that it wasn't happening. So when I saw it, I'm like, I guess Jane Elliott said, I'm the queen of this house because she got exactly what she wanted.
She said, okay, bitch, you may be the queen of Twitter, but I run this mug.
See, this is what I got to say to that on another note. On a purely storytelling, Game of Thrones, Grey's Anatomy, any type of super story, Lois and Clark, and I know Tony's view on it. I read the Michael Logan interview where he said that GH fans are like, you know, kids of divorce who don't want to let their parents go.
Those same fans that made you relevant.
This is the problem about that type of thinking. No, kids of divorce who know their parents are divorced look at entertainment for escapism. And, you know, yes, escapism has to be realistic escapism. And yes, great loves don't always end. But I watched that and I just had the sad, ironic chuckle to myself that because of the ego of actors, the greatest love of all is now Luke and Tracy, which in my opinion was a moderately successful comic pairing.
Yes.
So now, you know, this would be like if Superman at the very end of the story looked at Lois and said, girl, you know it was always really Lana Lang. I'm sorry. Or this would be like, you know, Rhett telling Scarlett, I don't give a damn about you, but I really always wanted Melanie anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I'm sorry. Luke and Tracy were cute, but I'm sorry. Luke was not the great love of Tracy's life. That ending meant nothing to anyone but the two actors. Because the great love of Luke Spencer's life will always be Laura Webber Viney. That's the reality of this situation. And the fact that actor egos can now dictate the shows to the degree that we're going to undo the greatest love of all is silly to me. It's like,
there we go. That's a name for the podcast, the 2017 Emmy Awards and the greatest love of all.
I thought that was...
Get on the cover of Newsweek. 30 million people didn't tune in to watch Logan Tracy.
Elizabeth Taylor did not come on that show for Tracy. Like, I thought that was...
Jane is not the fault of that. Because it's not the best Jane.
No.
His whole... You know, wanting to undo Luke and Laura. Well, he got his wish now. Can we just
My thing is this. If it wasn't for Luke and Laura, you would not have that house in Amsterdam. So it's like you're such an ungrateful little shit.
No, because the Fat Boys movie wasn't going to pay for it.
Okay. And Penitentiary 12. But my thing is this. Like, you should... I sat there and I watched it and I'm like, you're just pissing all over Luke and Laura that made you relevant. But then my thing is this, like, Lulu is going through a battle with the Cassadines. You mean to tell me, at least they could have had Luke do something where, you know, Tracy left this for you, Lulu. It's from your father. And it's ammo on how to get Valentine to give her that kid. Luke, who loves a good Cassadine takedown. To tell me he ain't sent her nothing, like do you have balls at that show?
I mean the actors hijacked the show. They got their moment, you know. That's fine, but it's like, that's, they're not the great love of the show. We saw it. Remember when Maria tried to make Sabrina the great love of Victor's life? It's like, why our fans were like, no, Nicky Newman.
And Eric Braeden had to finally, Eric Braeden, like, that was the one time I was like, go ahead, Eric. When they asked him about it, I think it was Logan who asked him about that. And he was like, I played it that Victor was very heartbroken and dismayed that Nikki betrayed him for a con artist. He was like, that bitch wasn't my greatest love.
I mean, it's like, that is just, I just don't get that whole, the last few years when it's been, you know, there's been such an agenda on Tony's part to try to, I mean, you don't like Jeannie in real life. That's fine. You know, you don't have to like your co-stars in real life, but Luke and Laura are legend. They are legend. They are one of the only legends we have left in this genre.
I mean, never heard Ice Cube rap about Luke and Tracy.
I mean, if Bella, you know, decided to dump Edward Cullen and the Wolf Boy for one of the Wolf Boy's, you know, third cousins that we don't even know what kind of wolf he turned into, I think the Twilight fans would have been upset about that. I mean, you know, there's just respecting, like,
put some respect on it, bro.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that I could think of just off the top of my head that comes close is, wasn't Julian Doug on Time? I mean, but that's, I mean, in turn, well, you said there's very few legends left. Yeah, and when I'm thinking about Julian Doug.
Yeah, they were definitely, you know, a precursor. They were a super couple. But Julian Doug, because of the epic nature of Luke and Laura, Julian Doug were the, you know, they're, you know, I mean, the first real super couple was As the World Turns, Jeff and Penny. And, you know, they were young lovers who, you know, ended in a tragic way. But, you know, the term super couple really came into being in the 80s because of the whole Gloria Monty era at GH. Because Monty brought in that larger-than-life, you know, an action-adventure element to it. Doug and Julie were most assuredly a super couple, but their drama was domestic. It was, my mama want to screw my man. Susan Martin is hiring Doug to mess with me, and then we fall in love. It was a domestic, you know, Bill Bell's Days of Our Lives was a domestic drama. And then General Hospital was a medical drama until Monty. And then Luke and Laura are doing such high-stakes things like taking on mobsters and taking on megalomaniacs who want to freeze the world. And that added a heightened, the same way there were models before there were supermodels, you know, the super couple really kind of had to have that formula of boy meets girl, boy and girl don't get along, or they do, you know, there's an attraction, but they fight it, there's something in it, and then they go on the run and have to face this insurmountable odd. I mean, you know, Luke and Laura took down Frank Smith and the Cassadines. Bo and Hope took down the Dragon. You know, there are super couples that, like, you know, I mean, Beth and Philip, their big obstacle was Beth's, you know, it was more reality based. Their big obstacle was Beth's child rapist father, but they still went on the run. You know, there's always that element of, you know, some against all odds obstacle that made those couples super couples. With Josh and Reva, they were super unique because their biggest obstacle was really each other. Like him not being able to get over his Madonna whore issues with her. Like he wanted it so bad, but he called her, he was thinking she was a tramp, and so she was like, I'm gonna marry your daddy and your brother. And so their super coupledom didn't really have, later it did with Sonny and Solita, and you know, they had the big obstacles of other people, but you know, they became a super couple truly on their little Pam Long meets Tennessee Williams, you know, hot cat on a hot tin roof type situation. But, you know, typically, especially for Days and GH, the super couples had to, like, face some kind of, you know, world stage dilemma. You know, Holden and Lily didn't. I mean, their dilemma was the fact that the rich snobby girl finds out that, Lucinda. Oh, my God. Yeah, Lucinda was an issue. But then it's like, oh, my God, your farm folk family is really my family too, and your sister is really my mama. Oh, but surprise, the sister was adopted, so we could still screw. I mean, but you know, there's definitely formula to super couple, but you make it unique, and you know, but they ain't even trying no more. I mean, I'm looking at these Valentines and Ninas and things, and I'm like, y'all ain't trying.
Oh, the benchmark for people in super couples now is so low.
I mean, is it even a job description to try? I mean, do we just have to have these people at the Metro?
No, it's asking.
Court eating dinner every day. I like you. I don't like Anna. I don't know. You act like you like Anna. Well, why don't you go talk to Anna? I will. Bitch, I'm going to smush your face into this glass. Don't you come over here. I'm out of the vein, darling. I'm out of the vein.
Jillian, final thought on the Daytime Emmys, or 2017 Daytime Emmys?
It was a good production overall. Could have done without the dogs. Could have done without Mary Hart thanking everybody who she knew, you know, from when she was playing jump rope.
She thanked Jay Wyman for
I'm like, girl, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Texaco, for the Texaco Theater.
You know? Thank you for that Hubba Gum. Like, I was with Nancy with that. Like, some people were like, Nancy was wrong. I'm like, go ahead, Nancy. You tell your truth and spill your tea, hunty. Because I was with her with that. Because I'm like, enough. Like, shut your face up.
Jamie, final thoughts on the 2017 Daytime Emmys?
I love me some Mary Hart, but I do too,
but shut up.
My final thoughts is, what a great tribute to all of Daytime. Thank you, people, producers, for making it classy, doing it not for the Vine, but for the fans. I thought the Agnes tribute was incredible. I really wish the people who created that would reach out to PBS, because it has always bothered me that PBS has done that Pioneers of series, and they've done Westerns, they've done sci-fi, they've done primetime soaps, but they have not done daytime soaps. And there would be no Pioneers of primetime soaps without the Pioneers of daytime soaps. So I really wish someone would pitch PBS something on Erna, Agnes, and Bill, and how they basically created this. And the Hummerts, obviously. You got to remember the Hummerts. And James Lipton and Roy Windsor and all those other people who, you know, kind of just created this most lucrative genre. That Agnes tribute was just so incredible. That made it special for me. I'm glad that the Bold and the Beautiful got to get up there for their 30th anniversary. Was very happy for the talk. I feel like the talk.
Did they do a Claire LeBine tribute? I don't think they did.
She was in the In Memoriam when Sexy Little Prince Eric was singing. But yeah, I mean, but Claire should be in, you know, there needs to be a full-on, you know, documentary about this great genre. And that, you know, I feel like that it, this Emmys also did a service to the rest of daytime. Lord knows they did to news magazines, because Mary Hart got 30 minutes. Mario Lopez was hosting, you know, and, yeah. And I'm so happy for The Talk, because this is The Talk.
They throw love
and
to
I
the
still see it, you know, in our comments, people will, when I will never watch The Talk because The Talk. His place, and it's like, if any show has tried to do a mea culpa, it's The Talk. It's like, my God, they promote the heck out of the soaps, and
The View, like someone tweeted me, and they were like, The View didn't even mention General Hospital's win.
Exactly, The View took the set from Sydney's bedroom on a penthouse on the city. So, ain't nobody ever been mad at them for that. It's
the only time ABC wants to do something daytime related is when they want to one up The Talk. Let's just be real. They did it last year or year before.
Great strategy for them. They've embraced daytime, but that's not the only reason that I like The Talk. The Talk also follows that Oprah model of what I was saying, how you have to open a vein on daytime if you really want people. When I really saw The Talk starting to get pop culture relevance is when they started doing that, I'm gonna reveal something about myself to y'all. And you know, Julie Chen revealed, you know, that she tried to have plastic surgery to look less Asian, and you know, they had all of them revealing all this kind of stuff. And you know, that always, as a, you know, as someone,
and wasn't that the one where Cheryl revealed that some more, like, talk shit about her about something different.
And then that caused that big drama, because, you
Boy, yes, it did.
All of them clapped back, so that was, you know, great,
that was good.
Free publicity for...
I need them to reveal some more shit, then, because that was good.
Talk has really been... I mean, and look, they had that... when Deadline announced recently that they're going to do a Roseanne reboot, someone pointed out that the real genesis of the idea was when...
she did the thing with Goodman.
Goodman, yeah. Came on and she told him that she was gay. And, you know, that was such a good viral moment. And I really feel that this show is the little.
That she was a talk show host and not. He says, woo, I thought you were going to tell me you were gay, because she admitted that she was a talk show host.
Yeah. Well, now I have to say, though, Darlene better not be gay in that reboot, because Darlene and David, I done lost Luke and Laura. I can't lose Darlene and David's great love. In the same year now. I can't do it now.
My final thought is
maybe
that
Darlene is part of a... Maybe they swing us. Maybe she get to get it on the side. But I need Darlene and David to stay together. And I need them to undo Roseanne's weird-ass final episode where she was talking about crazy stuff.
Because
that wasn't right! It wasn't right! It wasn't okay like Whitney Houston said.
My final thought is that I really love this year's awards, and it was the first time in years where I felt like it had done such a good job that it made me proud to be a soap fan, in that it's like, yes, they finally, these wonderful performers, these wonderful actors, the people who invest so much time and energy into their efforts every single year are finally getting something that acknowledges it and is equal to the work that they've put into it. And at the same time, they also honor the fans, because there's nothing that a fan wants more than to see their favorite show or actor respected. And for many years, it has felt like they haven't been. So for me, that's my final thought. We would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. You can find Jillian on Twitter at Jillian Bowe. Jamie is at Jamie_Giddens, and I'm at Luke_Kerr. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Viva la France!
No, Tony thinking he a Breck girl. Girl, sit down.
What's a Breck girl?
Oh my God, I'm not out now.